Here we go. Here we go. Thank you for listening to Stoop Kids, a Hey Arnold podcast. We're no superheroes, but we do what we can. I'm Cody Narveson, and you can find me on Twitter at Cody_BH.
I'm Harry Mack, and you can find me on Twitter at Chitaki Harry.
I'm Emily Suey. You can find me on Instagram at Emily Suey.
Not with us today is our chocoholic of a super producer, Jason Daphnis, who you can find on Twitter at Nintendoofus. You can also keep up with the podcast on Twitter and Instagram at StoopKidsPod. Oh, but anyway, Toto, we're home! Home, and this is my room, and you're all here, and I'm not going to leave here ever, ever again, because I love you all, and, oh, Auntie M, there's no place like kids is spelled with a Z. Stupid. Also with us today is a very special guest. Please welcome back to the show for the first time in Season 4, Seth Zarate. Seth, woo-hoo! How are you doing today?
I'm good. Thank you for having me. Glad to be back.
Yeah, it's great to have you back. You picked a pretty banging pair to come back for. And just jumping right in, we're here to talk about episode 75 of Hey Arnold. For those of you keeping track at home, that's season 4, episode 15, going by production code order. And we're going to start, as we always do, with episode A, which is called Monkey Man! Original air date, March 4th, 2000. The Wikipedia-sanctioned episode summary is as follows. When Arnold gives the superhero Monkey Man a taste of normal life, he is far too busy to bother helping the weak and downtrodden. He realizes what he has become after Sid is mugged in front of a big party Monkey Man is attending. And Wikipedia wanted me to mention that the guest star for this episode, the notable one, is Andy Dick as the voice of Monkey Man. And some other shout-outs, specifically for those that made this episode possible, Frank Weiss, who was in the director's chair for this one, and show author and creator Craig Bartlett, maybe you've heard of him, he wrote this one. So shout outs to them. And Emily, let's kick it to you first. What did you think about Monkey Man?
Oh, about Monkey Man! Yeah, I can't do it as good as you, Cody, but I want to hear Harry and Seth's takes too. So this is Hillwood's like official superhero, basically. And I don't know if we've had any urban legends this season. So we're finally back in a urban legend episode. And yeah, I've got a lot of thoughts on it. I think that the pacing of it is really fast and adds a lot to some of the humor, like especially right off the bat. When Arnold and Gerald are walking down the street, they're like, man, we're never going to find this Monkey Man. And then Mr. Green immediately says to them, like, as they're walking past him, oh, Monkey Man, like, I know exactly where he is at the exact time. Here's his coordinates. Go get him. And I don't know, there's something to the pacing of that. It kind of keeps going in that really fast realm throughout it. And including Monkey Man's entire journey of from superhero so focused on everyone else to turning too close into the self, to being too self-centered. And all of that like happens really, really fast. So yeah, I think there's some messages that kind of get mixed up in all of the pacing. I think there's some good intentions behind the plot here, but there's definitely some murkiness to it. So I'll try my best to explain what I mean. So it definitely makes me think about Pigeon Man. And in Pigeon Man, Arnold like introduces this outsider Pigeon Man, Vincent, to pizza and to the world, and kind of gets him out of his shell and has him walking down the street instead of his outsider roof area with the pigeons. And that causes Vincent to like see the world differently, but also has him turn more away from the world a bit. And he kind of his like anxiety and everything is ramped up. then, and he wasn't ready to like be thrown into the world in the way that Arnold was trying to introduce him in this like exciting way. But here, Arnold introduces Monkey Man to the world and to Banana Splits and everything like that that he didn't know about. And Monkey Man loves it, can't get enough, and immediately wants to jump into like, well, what have I been missing? What is life outside of my very other focused helping the innocent citizens of Hillwood every day and running around in a cape and screaming Monkey Man? What is it like to focus on me, Monkey Man, instead? But in the pacing of it, they have it happen so fast that he, and take it to the extreme, so he becomes too focused on himself and on the finer things in life, and he's got the fancy purple coat. And so I think it, and because the way they take that journey too, into a place of like, well, Monkey Man, like, you're supposed to be helping other people. Like, what are you doing? And Sid yells at him because he didn't help him when he was getting his beetle boots mugged. Arnold's upset and like, yeah, what are you doing? But there's something to be said about Monkey Man needs some time for himself. Like, it's good he was introduced to things that were exciting. He needs time to care for himself and not just be focused on random citizens around town. But it takes it to the extreme. So I think Arnold and Sid and the kids, the way they treat Monkey Man's ascent into, yeah, the sophisticated realm and more selfish land is like, they don't treat that in a way that's great, I think. But in general, like, there's a lot that's funny about the episode. Monkey Man, when I think of him, I just think of his he's super memorable, the way his character is drawn and his outfit and his Monkey Man, like, verbal tic that is so strongly associated with his character. Also, yeah, there's, like, he's a total outsider, like Pigeon Man, but just a different personality, different types of mental health stuff going on. But, yeah, otherwise, what would I like to say about it? I think I said probably more than enough, but... Craig Bartlett was actually the voice actor for Monkey Man in the Jungle Movie, but here we have Andy Dick, who does a great job of this character, but yeah, we don't need to talk about him.
Yeah, it's like, it's weird. I wonder why Craig replaced him on the Jungle Movie. I wonder why they didn't bring back that guy.
Yeah, thank God. But yeah, and Gerald, I'd say great storytelling too with the urban legend at the beginning. I love that. And him and Sid handing it off to each other. Really funny moments with Grandpa being like at the dinner table. So, Mr. Monkey Man. Just like trying to talk to him like, you know, the average Joe, but he's being Grandpa about it. Yeah, that's all I got to say for now. A lot of thoughts though on Monkey Man.
A lot of really good thoughts. And you know what, despite what you may think, a pretty good line reading of our title character, Emily. So thank you for that. And we'll pivot next. I think we'll kick it over to Harry. And Harry, if you can give your thoughts. And also, it escapes me, who are we talking about again? What's the superhero we're talking about?
I get it. I think that the superhero we're talking about is Monkey Man. I think that was probably the worst of the three of us so far. I'm better at doing the Monkey Man Tourette's thing, which is like maybe a little bit problematic to make fun of. I don't mean to be making fun of it.
Yeah, we'll sidestep past that. What'd you think of the episode, Harry?
Well, thanks, Cody. Yeah, I kind of have mixed feelings about this. I think that Emily characterized it really, really well. It really is too bad for this episode that it recalls Pigeon Man so clearly, because Pigeon Man is one of the best episodes of Hey Arnold. I do not think this is one of the best episodes of Hey Arnold, right? Like, unfortunately, but what it is, and what I really like about it is it's like a master in repose. You know what I mean? Where it's like Craig Bartlett is now so good at writing Hey Arnold episodes. He has the beat so down pat that he can do an incredible amount with very little time, right? Like this episode goes everywhere. We see all of the kids. We see downtown. We get an urban legend. We even see the borders interact with Monkey Man. And like, Arnold has like three or four very impactful conversations with Monkey Man. It's really, to Emily's point, it's kind of mind-boggling that we get as much mileage out of this episode as we do. I think that I'm not here to critique Craig Bartlett, of course, but it is kind of funny the way that the deconstructive aspects of this episode kind of work against its ultimate message in a way that often doesn't happen in Hey Arnold. In fact, I think oftentimes the sort of like almost hidden disillusionment and deconstructive aspects of Hey Arnold really help enhance the messaging. But in this, it's sort of like, I get that on the sort of like baseline, we're supposed to be glad that Monkey Man sort of reassumes the mantle of Monkey Man. He rediscovers who he is and what's important to him and his values. He is taught that those values are okay by Arnold, right? Like, this is Arnold's role. All of that is very good. However, the show has a lot of fun sort of like poking at the fact that he is a seriously socially maladjusted individual, and that maybe, in fact, he should not be Monkey Man, right? Like, he clearly has a fixation that is sort of interfering with his ability to live a normal life. And there is a very clean deconstructive reading of this, that these children basically bully him back into doing that when he is on a trajectory into maturity. Again, like, not at all sort of like what the episode is going for. I think that that's sort of a bad faith reading, right? But it is just funny to me that, like, why would they go so out of their way to sort of like disillusion us as to the heroic aspects of Monkey Man, make it so very clear that he is just sort of like this sort of sad Peter Pan-esque figure in Hillwood who cannot overcome his fixations, and then have him return to those fixations. it's an interesting course to take for this episode, I guess. Particularly the fact that, like, he is sort of like actively trying to repress his fixations in the form of the Tourette's in the second act of this. But hey, I think that, like, this is an episode where we have to sort of settle on the fact that Hillwood is not, despite its sort of trappings toward this, it is not our reality, right? It is a reality in which cartoons live, and in which there can be a place for a guy like Monkey Man. And to that end, I really like that ultimate message, right? It's very much the message that some of the other episodes have had about characters who sort of exist on the margins, right? Even like the Jolly Ollie Man at one extreme, which is that there is room for these people to be who they are, and they deserve our respect and they deserve our empathy, even if we can't understand them, or even if they choose lifestyles that are maybe inexplicable to us or from our point of view. And I think it's great that Arnold can embrace that about his friend, the Monkey Man. So, I think that it's an interesting episode. It's a lot of fun. It's really fun to, like, end up seeing Monkey Man, because we've seen him mentioned, or we've seen him in the periphery before. And so to see sort of an urban legend brought to light is really great. And I think I'd finally just like to echo what Emily said, which is that this is one of the better urban legend readings in the entire series, which is really saying something. It has like a full rhyme scheme. We do cutaways. Gerald is in great voice. Just a really classic urban legend. But what do you guys think about this one?
For sure. And sorry, I can't remember if I don't know if we've all forgotten at this point the superhero we're talking about, or if it's just me. But Seth, I know you're sort of on the cusp here. Do you happen to recall what episode this is?
Oh yeah, I can help you. Last I checked, let me look through my notes. We were talking about Monkey Man.
Yeah, man.
And I gotta say, like, both of you guys, Emily and Harry, you set me up so good. Like, this movie is literally what I was thinking, because the pacing in this episode, how much Craig Bartlett crams into this, I was literally thinking, I was like, this goes toe to toe in terms of like a hero arc and a hero in society arc, like with The Dark Knight, with like Frank Miller, with like Daredevil comics and TV series. Like, I'm like in an A episode of this cartoon show, we're going to like social reflections and depths that like people spend
years of their lives developing characters for. So I was like, holy crap. Like, this is a masterclass in like setting the scene. So that was like my first impression. Just had to get that out of the way. But like, I do think like I could spend a whole bunch of time just unpacking the psychology, like or the psychological messages that Arnold is like exchanging with Monkey Man. Like that whole idea of trying to like trace the arc of like, oh, so what we are presupposing is that this kid who was otherwise normal was bullied into being a vigilante. And so then we're like, okay, so like we have this whole idea of what vigilantism and like how it kind of relates to like fascism. And there's this big, like, just ball of that. And that kids can just be pushed there by being bullies. But then it's like flipped on its head into like justice and like preservation of the innocent. And then like, oh man, I can't even put coherent thoughts into this. Also, I have to admit, once we're getting into season four, a lot of these episodes I haven't seen. So I don't think I've seen this episode, but I was like seriously blown away. The speech that Arnold has, or the conversation that Arnold has with him, with Monkey Man, at the end of the episode, where after sort of joining society and then high society, Monkey Man realizes that he has sort of abandoned his morals or his values. I do think for all of the questionable implications of being a superhero, the message of like failure is okay and failure is a part of life, and that does not sort of like invalidate your quest for purpose or meaning. I think just like on a like a humanistic, like, oh, that is, I think, like an important lesson for children to learn and to see. And honestly, like, I mean, you guys know, but for our thousands of listeners, like I go to therapy. And so this, I felt like this paralleled a lot of conversations I've had with my therapist about just like, oh, like, what does it mean to balance, you know, like my own sort of ideals and values in an objective headspace and marry that to a very subjective, unbalanced, like, what's the word? Relative reality, where everything is sort of up for interpretation and you need to find balance in things to sort of get equilibrium, and, you know, nothing is black and white. It was like a really helpful reminder, I think. Also, I just want to call out, when he joins high society, he looked a lot like Willy Wonka, which I thought, like,
uncanny.
I was like, are they saying something? Because I think we can all agree that like Willy Wonka is probably not also like a very well-adjusted social role model. So
wait, what?
I know.
It also leads into the second episode, but we'll talk about that later.
Yeah. The only other thing that you Harry, you brought up was this idea of like, oh, this isn't our reality. This is the Hey Arnold reality. And this is what made me think of The Dark Knight and Christopher Nolan's Batman trilogy, is like, I remember reading about those movies that they're like, oh, these are supposed to be grounded in reality, but it's like a heightened reality. It's like 110% reality.
Right. Well, it's like a world where in our reality, Batman would be awful, but in Gotham City, the world needs Batman, obviously, right? So I think we can say the same thing for Monkey Man.
No, exactly. Where it's like, if you were to pull Monkey Man into here, into universe, you know, Stoop Kids, we'd be like, oh yeah, that guy probably needs to see a therapist. Like, it would be for his own benefit. But like in this world, it is it is just like, oh yeah, like, no, actually I can see why he brings value, and why, you know, like, people admire him, and he is like an indispensable part of the urban legend tapestry. It was fascinating.
Yeah. And I mean, well, okay. Really well said, all three of you. And I guess kind of taking that baton, if I can, Seth, the, you know, this and how it stacks up with the other kind of, in my mind, like the top tier urban legend episodes. When I think of urban legends in A. Arnold, I think of Monkey Man, I think of Pigeon Man, I think of Big Caesar. I think those are probably the ones that I think of first. And like, in, you know, more or less, and I know some of y'all kind of gestured at this in some capacity, but you know, all of those sort of, ultimately the best kind of, in my mind, the best kind of urban legend episodes are ones where there is that balance. You know, it's something that isn't broke that Arnold feels the need to fix. And maybe this is just like the benefit of hindsight, but like, I think Monkey Man and Pigeon Man, if memory serves, they were both sort of wary of what this, you know, any sort of change from what's, you know, it kind of changed from the norm, you know, what their day to day is. You know, Monkey Man, he gets it. He says, yeah, I can't be distracted from my job. Like, I have an obligation, a fixation, to use, another word, that I think Harry used. But you know, it's ultimately something where the roles get jostled. We have a problem that we need to fix. And, you know, in some form, you know, they return back to the water, or they go off into the sky to be away from people more, because they further realize that this is, you know, I'm already secluded. I need to be more secluded. Or they find that, oh, I like, this is actually my role and I need to inhabit it because that's, what's best for me. And those always come off really memorable because there is that sad realization of like, there's no fixing this in the way that we necessarily want to. We're fixing this in that we're kind of putting things back to it the way that they quote unquote should be, but they're not, like, you know, things are perhaps not optimal. And that hint of sadness is, I think this shows strong suit. And this particular episode heightened, as it definitely has been said, heightened by Gerald's recitation of the urban legend kind of spiel, which in my, for the record, for me is probably the best of the series. And, you know, while something like Pigeon Man or even Big Caesar is like a top tier episode to me, not just urban legend episode, with regards to, you know, urban legends, I really like kind of Monkey Man's place in that list. You know, basketball metaphors. You know, this episode isn't like a LeBron James or a Giannis Antetokounmpo, but it's definitely a player that I would want on my team. You know, someone like a Ricky Rubio or an OG Anunoby. You know, you need those types of players to win a championship. And that's where the sports metaphor ends. I also like how this episode and other great urban legend episodes build up, you know, not only the urban legend mythology, but also Arnold's mythology. I think about the scene where Arnold is sitting with Monkey Man at the ice cream shop, and everybody's looking in through the window and just like, wow, he's, wow, like, look at him. He's sitting there with like a legend, you know, an urban myth. Like that always, sort of, it hits me in a certain way. It heightens, these sorts of episodes even more than they are there, even more than the Gerald and Sid, going through their spiel at the beginning of these, episodes. And I last thing I'll say, I, all of us, and myself included, you know, we, the gears get turning about this because I think, to Seth's point, one of Seth's many great points, this episode is teeming, it's brimming with a big ball of stuff that it doesn't really, like, the, you know, you want Monkey Man to be more mature, but him being mature just, like, turns him into a capitalist, and he is very pure of heart, and, like, you don't want him to get a sour heart, but you also don't want him to, you know, be Monkey Man, but you also want him to be Monkey Man. There are a lot of conflating, like dualities and ideologies that are butting heads. And there's this big sort of, there are a lot of shades of gray that don't really get fleshed out. And that's maybe a shortcoming of this episode, but, I mean, for better and for worse, it, I don't know, it festers. You know, I think about this episode I'm sure a lot of viewers of Hey Arnold think about this episode a lot, and that's even without even with sort of the lack of focus that we maybe want from it, or the lack of defining certain things, defining Monkey Man's interiority a little bit more. Even though they still did a pretty good job, there's some, I don't know, glaring banana size holes that could be filled. But all in all, I mean, this is a classic Hey Arnold episode for better and for worse.
Yeah, it certainly is. First of all, I really want to do like some kind of a superhero podcast with Seth now. That sounds like it would be extremely fun. Also, I really love this tinge of sadness that you pointed to, Cody, as if like I want to see like Monkey Man Mask of the Phantasm, where it's actually it's a terrible tragedy that he must return to the Monkey Man mantle. That's very funny. You also mentioned Big Caesar, and like speaking of Batman, right? I think Big Caesar is like almost as important to understanding this episode and the scope of urban legends themselves as Pigeon Man is, right? Because it's sort of like, just like at the end, they have to let Big Caesar go so that he can continue to be Big Caesar, and so that the urban legends can continue to exist. That's very important in this episode as well, right? There's this idea that even if Monkey Man is not sort of himself doing crime fighting, or something about what he represents, particularly to the children of PS-118 / Hillwood itself, is important, right? It's like his existence is perpetuating a kind of more innocent childlike magic that deserves to be in the world, right? And like, Arnold can't really articulate it that way, because that's not really the way Arnold's even thinking about it consciously. But Monkey Man returning sort of symbolizes that, right? There's this idea that Arnold and his friends, they can, through their own advocacy, maintain and perpetuate that sort of like better angels of our nature idea of a city that isn't just scary. It can also be hopeful and mystical and, you know, super heroic, which I really like. The only other thing I thought of that, Seth, you brought up, I really love your take on this episode, rumination on failures. And in particular, I think that the type of failure that Monkey Man faces in this is a really good one to have children think about, right? Because it's like, it's not a practical failure. It's sort of like a ideological failure, or a failure of mentality, right? It's like the Monkey Man at the beginning of this episode is sort of dealing with some repressed feelings, right? Like, he pretends he doesn't want to be a part of society. He pretends like he can't let anything distract him from the job because he doesn't want to, when in fact he does want those things. He's just afraid of being bullied or whatever, or he's afraid of, as we find out, like being too into the good things and losing his purpose, right? I think it's really important that like we can show kids that like, hey, like even Monkey Man loses his purpose sometimes, right? Like, there are days when even he doesn't want to be Monkey Man. That's okay. He is still Monkey Man. He can still go back to being Monkey Man. So, like, you know, kids, like, even if there are days when you don't want to do whatever it is that you think you want to do, even if there are days where you feel lazy, or you you want to eat a banana split, like, that doesn't make you not who you are, right? Like, you don't have to always be Monkey Man to be Monkey Man, I guess. So I'm inspired. You're really bringing me around on this episode, all of you.
Yeah, me too. Gosh, y'all had great things to say about this. I really like everyone talking about the balance too of it, and the different types of balance you were thinking about in the episode, because I was thinking so much about just the balance between helping others versus caring for yourself. And you guys were also talking about how this could only exist in the Arnold universe, and not just, in our world. We can't just say, you know, oh, what should Monkey Man do in this world in 2022, in modern society? He's very much in Arnold's world, and even through maybe Arnold's perspective, especially in this episode, which is why I think, because Arnold is, you know, not to get all deconstructing Arnold, I guess, on Arnold's ass, but Arnold's so focused on helping others, and he needs more balance in his life, and he needs more focus on who is he. He's too much of a people pleasing, advice giving little guy, but we love him. He's wonderful, obviously. He's the man. But I think because of that perspective through him and through this being his universe, that's why they gear it even further, or he steers Monkey Man even further into going back to being Monkey Man, because he needs that type of hero. Arnold needs Monkey Man to be Monkey Man and not to see what he's like without the Monkey Man facade.
Holy crap. I never even thought of, like, it's so obvious now, right? But, like, Monkey Man as a metaphor for Arnold himself, and also, like, just in general, right? So many of the urban legends have to continue to exist because they're what allows Arnold to be who he is, right? It's like the story with his grandparents, right? That sort of forms the A plot of the entire series. There's this idea that, like, Arnold is who he is because he believes in that story and he believes in what it means to him, right? And so there is this sense that by believing in that, or it's sort of like a chicken and the egg situation, right? But it's sort of like Arnold's belief in those things makes those things true, and those things being true makes Arnold believe in them, right? And so there is sort of a sense in which, like, Arnold is himself, and all of us are in and of ourselves perpetuating the things that we want to be true by believing that they're true, right? And therefore sort of like giving a reality to the sort of world that we want to see.
I'm so glad you said that. I mean, I honestly could keep going, like, psychoanalyzing this episode and Hey Arnold in general, which you guys already do a wonderful job. So I'll just give my two cents. You know, like, my understanding of Arnold throughout the series, which, you know, is a little bit more limited, it is very much marked by, like, his relationship with his grandparents and that sort of unsaid tension or sadness or tragedy as to why he is living with his grandparents in this boarding house. And I remember I watched this video talking about trauma, and they said, and the speaker said, you know, in your pain, there is purpose, and in your purpose, you will find your own pain. And it makes me think about just, like, coalescing these ideas of, like, Arnold sees these urban legends as a manifestation of all of the wonderful things, the ideological things he needs in his life, just sort of like the ability to wonder, the ability to believe in, like, justice and standing up for yourself and your place in the world and these things, like these really big concepts that children have to deal with, and how he tries to relate to them is a projection of his own problems. Like, he is trying to help Monkey Man integrate in the world because he too is trying to find his own place in the world. Like, he doesn't know what it's like to balance all these things, but he's trying his best. And just like the failures doesn't change who you are, like, pick up a mirror, man, like, and look right back at yourself. I don't know. I was floored by how, like, profound this, like, this was it. You're right. I guess a potential criticism is it asks these incredibly philosophically deep and complex questions without really digging into them further. But just the fact that Craig was able to articulate those questions through storytelling so quickly and cohesively, I'm at a loss for words.
Wow. Yeah. No, that this is all such a good point, especially, I mean, like you had said, Cody, there's a really interesting way in which Arnold himself is repeatedly sort of made parallel to Monkey Man in this, right? Like, when the kids are watching him talk to Monkey Man at the ice cream parlor, it's like he's an urban legend, right? It's like he's sort of like taking Helga at one point says that, oh yeah, you and Monkey Man would get along. You're both freaks of nature, right? And there is sort of that sense of that, right? There's this sense that like you were saying, Seth, everything that Arnold does is also this sort of means of him exploring his own interiority and his own belief systems and his own values. And I think that like there's a larger point that the series makes that that's kind of how we all operate as well. And so it becomes very important that things like the urban legends and the stories that Arnold tells himself, they have a degree of truth to them, right? Like maybe a deeper truth to them that does sort of transcend subjectivity or does sort of transcend childishness, but only does so sort of with his effort, right? It's sort of like there's this sense that like you're like the world can be better, like we can be better. We just have to take ownership of that or be a part of that.
Amen. Preach to Monkey Man. We really got into some deep stuff, and I feel weird segueing into this. My only shout out is the fact that I realized during this whole conversation that I've never had a banana split. So that's maybe that makes me a superhero. Maybe that's my power. The fact that I've been able to withstand the urge for. I'm not going to say how old I am years, but I have a lot to you know, to Seth's point, maybe I need to hold up a mirror to, you know, myself and to society. Any other lingering thoughts hey, can anybody top that? What thoughts do y'all have to close out this episode?
All right, Cody.
Shout outs, lingering threads. Yeah, bring it on, Mackin.
Yeah. The Dairy Queen by my apartment is closing this weekend, but they do have banana splits. So my shout outs is, or challenge maybe, is for Cody to go and get a banana split. And then one other shout out.
I'm busy that day, but thank you.
All right. There's this, I really like the little like cart that Monkey Man like flies at people, to scare them away. And the fact that it's got like monkey paws on it or something, that was very funny to me. And also shout outs to Monkey Man swinging around Hillwood just with ropes and whatnot. How does he do it? How does he do it? Where does he get those wonderful toys? We may never know. What a beautiful creature.
I have so many shout outs, so I'll try to go fast. I love that the one mugger guy has very wavy hair and it looks like the Nickelodeon logo. Frankly, it looks exactly like the Nickelodeon wavy curvy. You know what I'm talking about. Also, I like that when they're all the kids are hanging out, at recess, and they're talking about Monkey Man and the legend, but they haven't gotten into the story yet. Sid is like, you guys, slow down. And then he hands it over to Gerald. That really made me laugh the first time I was watching this, or rewatching this. And also, it's something to be said about the pacing, too, of this episode and how much they get accomplished. We're not going to slow down because it's freaking Monkey Man. Also, shout out to Monkey Man's stuffed animal monkey. I myself had a stuffed animal monkey named Archie when I was a kid, who I loved dearly and left out in the rain once, and it was a whole thing. But I had him for so many years, and I loved him very much. He was actually a puppet, but I just treated him like a regular stuffed animal. And also, just shout out to Gerald again for the storytelling and the rhyming and the amazing way he tells the urban legend in this one.
Beautiful. Well, actually, I'm really sorry. I hate to do this. I've got tickets, one ticket, sorry, so I can't invite anybody here, but a ticket to a screening of La Boheme at the opera that's just on my block here. So I'm going to do that, and then we're going to come back here, and we're going to get into the latter half of this episode. So stick around, don't touch that dial, and we'll be back before you know it. Welcome back to Stoop Kids, a Hey Arnold podcast. We've got episode 75B up next here, and that episode is called Buses, Bikes, and Subways. Original air date, March 4th, 2000. It's the same as episode A, everybody. March 4th, 2000. The Wikipedia-sanctioned episode summary is as follows. Helga and Harold must return to town on their own after the bus leaves them behind after a school trip to a chocolate factory, and Helga has tickets for a wrestling match, and she cannot be late. That was all one sentence. That felt very weird. And once again, shouting out the folks who made this episode possible. Christine Kolosoff directed this one, and Craig Bartlett returned for part two. He got the writing credit for this episode as well. When you're on a roll, you're on a roll, I guess. And speaking of people being on rolls, Harry, let's throw it to you. What'd you think about this episode?
Oh, wow. The pressure. excuse me. Sorry.
Not looking good so far, my man.
These episodes both sort of, and I hate to sort of like meta critique the series, but do you ever feel like Craig Bartlett sometimes comes back to write just to be like, all right, guys, we've gotten a little off track. Now, I'm going to show you how to do a classic Hey Arnold episode, because both of these episodes really felt that way for me. In particular, I really love this episode for a lot of reasons, right? Obviously, it's Helga-centric, which I'm a huge fan of. Also, one of the big underrated sort of plot mechanisms for Hey Arnold is just when they pair up two characters that normally wouldn't be paired up. This is like a really great example of that. Also, probably because it's Craig Bartlett writing, all of the characters' work in this episode is so, so sharp. Harold is so sharp. I love that there is this angle with Harold where he can't help himself. He just doesn't know any better, but to like, he always has to pull that cork out of the boat. He always has to like go to the room and overindulge, but it doesn't mean he's a bad person, right? And it actually doesn't even mean he's a selfish person, right? He's thinking about other people too, is sort of like the over-under of this episode. It's just that, like a lot of kids, he has sort of poor impulse control. That's something that has always been true of Harold, that we are only now sort of characterizing that way. I really love that. I love when an episode can sort of retroactively make me understand a character differently. I love that Helga is sort of like mega maniacal about her goals in this episode. Again, that's something that's always been true of Helga, but really manifests, right? Because usually it's all about Arnold. But it's really funny to see that, like, when she's thinking about WrestleMania, she can't be present, right? She can't do anything else. She's obsessed with WrestleMania. So really sharp writing there. I love that, like, Chocolate Boy is the complicating factor, right? Because all we needed was something that got Helga and Harold together, right? Everything else was sort of a gravy or a MacGuffin even, but just making it Chocolate Boy is such a like natural thing to introduce and plays so well with the Arnold lore that it's the sort of thing that is just perfect for a later series episode like this one. I really just, you know, for the most part, this is just the two characters like playing off one another. I think it's really impressive that this is an episode with a lot of tension and a lot of arguing. Like, Helga is really, really reading Harold the Riot Act throughout this episode, right? But it never really feels that grating to me. Maybe just because of how likable both of these characters are and how Francesca Marie Smith is like in a class of her own when it comes to voice acting. Though Harold's voice actor does a really good job here too. And I, you know, I really like how it resolves. I really like how it's revealed that actually Harold is not sort of like totally solipsistic in the sense that he is not paying attention to anybody else. In fact, he has a little bit more going on under the hood than Helga gave him credit for, and he was thinking about her just like she was kind of thinking about him, right? She's the person who realizes that he's gone and goes back for him. So even though she has that prickly exterior, we know that she has the heart of gold somewhere deep, deep, deep down. which is pretty funny. I also thought it was really funny and kind of strange that that all of the people on the bus forget about Harold and Helga for the entire episode. That was something that kind of felt uncharacteristic. And so maybe a weak point in this episode. I'm not too sure about that, but it is very funny, especially the fact that we keep cutting back to them doing the bottles of beer on the wall and they get done with, I think, what was it, Cody? I think you said 83 bottles of beer before they notice, 82, excuse me, before they realize that two of theirs are gone, including Simmons, who has really great moments here. So yeah, all in all, I think this is just a really classic B episode of Hey Arnold, especially for the late series, right? It really makes the most of all of its characters and feels like a classic Hey Arnold episode. Even right up until the end when we get that message about sort of like not necessarily dismissing Harold as one thing. I really liked it. I don't know necessarily why it's called what it's called. I think maybe it could have a better name, but what do you all think?
Dang, shots fired at the naming convention for this. Wow, just as he closes out. I guess, you know, we'll get in the ring for that one in due time, I'm sure. But Emily, let's look to you next. What did you think about this B episode?
This B episode of buses, bikes, and boats and subways. Also, yeah, to start off with just the title, I really thought this was going to be like a fun public transportation episode. And it's really just focused on Harold and Helga getting lost and being at the chocolate factory too. The whole Willy Wonka chocolate factory plays a big role in it. But yeah, I think this is a pretty fun episode overall. I think, yeah, it's also sort of just a grab bag of different settings. And to Harry's point, it's fun to see any episode where it's the two characters paired together that aren't normally paired together. So we have in the grab bag, though, of Willy Wonka World, which also has the font in like Disney font. we've got the chocolate factory in many different rooms of candy and chocolate and chocolate swan fountains and everything. We're at a circus with a bunch of clowns. And like out in the middle of nowhere, wherever they are on that dirt road in the clown car, we're in the boat with Uncle Earl, like Sheena's uncle. I think his name was Uncle Earl. Sheena's uncle. And we're at Helga's house briefly, where Simmons is talking to Miriam. And then we're finally, thank God, we're at WrestlePalooza at the very end. So I think it's pretty fun as far as just like, let's take these two characters and have them go to all sorts of weird places that they aren't usually at. But yeah, I did think it was going to be more transportation focused than it was. I also think that the subway in the title is actually more of an L train. Like it's more of like Chicago's elevated train system. And even on the map that they're looking at, it says Union Park, wherever Helga and Harold are trying to read the map. And Union Park is in Chicago. It's where Pitchfork Music Festival happens. So anyway, public transportation. I think Harry's points are great about Harold and Helga's characterization, like the writing of Harold as having some poor impulse control, but being, you know, good at heart, and Helga just like zeroing in on something like is it WrestleMania or WrestlePalooza?
WrestleMania.
Okay, thank you. WrestleMania. And the only thing though is that I can't agree with you on, Harry, is Helga Heart of Gold ? Helga is like so terrible to Harold in this episode. I wrote down some of the things she says. She's mean to him about his weight constantly. She's mean to him about his intelligence nonstop, calls him all sorts of names. She calls him like moron and king of the morons and idiot and big oaf and just like all sorts of things, and is straight up just yelling at him a lot in the episode. So she was grating on me, at least in this one, as she does pretty often, I guess. Like, God bless her, but she's Helga G. Pataki. And otherwise, I think Chocolate Boy did nothing wrong. I think it's great that he was in the chocolate pool drinking all the chocolate, and I love the shot of him like with the chocolate covering his face and dripping down off his face. And then it cuts straight to Simmons wiping the chocolate off his face with the towel. Like, and he's smiling so big and he's just so happy to be at the chocolate factory. You love to see him there. Otherwise, I think that about does it for my top level takes. And major shout out to Justin Shankaraw, though. Again, the voice actor for Harold is amazing. His whole bit with like, Helga, you saved my life. I think I love you. And like hugging her on the beach is so funny.
Listen, all I'm saying is, you know, Chocolate Boy seems very cute and innocent, but next week we're going to be covering a lawsuit that a family submitted after a couple of their children died from eating fungus that they got from eating chocolate from this factory, because Chocolate Boy doesn't wash his freaking feet and he dove half naked into a vat of chocolate. And so, look, just, you know, all I'm saying, consider all sides of this. Chocolate Boy on thin ice.
Cody's trying to cancel Chocolate Boy, you guys. We got to stop him.
Look, if you're going to jump in a vat of chocolate, put some shoes on, maybe.
That was his one shot, though, Cody. I don't want in a pool of chocolate.
I don't want any tootsie chocolate. The thought of somebody consuming that makes me sick. Chocolate Boy,
okay,
you make
Cody,
me sick.
FDA Narvison, go off.
Yeah, freaking darn accurate. That's right, Emily. Seth, let's toss it to you now. I'm tossing it to you. Here's the microphone. What did you think about this episode?
Good catch, thank you, Cody. Yeah, I had a lot of fun with this one. Not as much as the first one. I do agree. I do like the sort of gems you get out of the more unconventional pairings of characters. I'm with Emily on this one. I was like kind of astounded how much Helga was bullying Harold. Like, I guess I've been conditioned built my tolerance to her sort of antagonizing Arnold. But then to just see it randomly directed to Harold, I was like, oh, this is like really mean. I just want to make it explicit because twice, like, the title has been brought up and nobody has like explicitly said that this is an allusion to Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, the movie, which is about like a pair that are dealing with like hating each other, trying to get to a destination. I just want to,
you know, I feel very silly for not noticing that. I have not seen that movie. But thank you, Seth. Yeah. That's a really good point.
No problem. I just want to make sure, like, in case there are any younger audiences, Gen Z members, they might not know about this, you know?
Yeah.
John Candy, Steve Martin. Check it out.
Right. And again, without giving away my age, this did miss my radar. I'm kind of whatever on it. I did watch it a few holiday seasons ago, but if you're the type of person to, you know, put together like a Thanksgiving or a Christmas like kind of watch list, like toss this one in there. It's fine enough. It's two grown men being dicks to each other. It's great.
Yeah. Classic comedy pairing. You can't go wrong with that. The one thing I did want to call out is like by the end of the movie, these episodes are like movies to me. Honestly, like I'm shocked. Again, Craig Bartlett. Damn. I don't know if I could say that. You might have to bleep me on that one.
I think we've let that one slide, but I'll mark it down just in case.
Okay. I don't really feel like Helga's like contrition or like Harold to me was the bigger person in this episode. Like Helga apologizes to him, but I don't know if the apology matches the disrespect, you know, like the apology needs to be as loud as the disrespect was. And there was a lot of very loud disrespect in this episode. So in some ways, I guess like it was unsatisfying to not see Helga maybe get her comeuppance. She ends up getting to WrestleMania. You know, she is not lost. She has a friend who's there with her and like helps her achieve her goals. And then maybe the thing I just considered is like, oh, well, maybe like the focus is not actually Helga. The moral of the story is to instead be more like Harold, who is, you know, despite his flaws and his, you know, bad impulse control and stuff like that, is trying to be helpful to his friend the entire time. And, you know, is very patient, you know, for the most part, you know, sort of just accepting her barbs and insults. And eventually does kind of lead them to the promised land that is WrestleMania. So, you know, like, and accepts her apology. So, seriously, pour one out for Harold because he's a real one.
Yeah, pour out a glass of warm, melted chocolate. And as I'm pouring that out, he's like, his head's popping up underneath it. And Chocolate Boys, because they want to, and mine as well, because warm melted chocolate's pretty good. I'm probably not pouring that out, come to think of it. But I like this episode. Great pairing this week, through and through. More kind of movie like vibe references, like things that I like, sort of the It Happened One Night, you know, Odd Couple pairing, except without the romance that movie has. And also Pee-wee's Big Adventure, you know, where it's a road movie, a lot of weird stuff is happening, and kind of what everybody's been getting at, you know, this type of episode, and similar episodes before it, where it's, listen, like, these are our A and B tier characters, you know what you're getting with these, they've been characterized through and through, let's hit all the various pairings and permutations that we can, and put them in strange scenarios and just like see what we get from it. That, you know, not that they're necessarily looking for, you know, we've got what, 100 episodes, it's not like they're thinking that, oh, like, we can be on cruise control for the last like 25 episodes or anything. Yikes, this is episode 75, that's frightening. But they're obviously always looking to you know, evolve and retool and tinker with backstories and narrative arcs and things like that. But yeah, I mean, it seems like a cheat code, you know, put two characters together, throw them on the road, throw them in a weird situation. And like with Helga, especially, right? Like, this isn't the first time we've seen her on the road with somebody. And I think in a previous episode, I've been one to vocalize, like, you know, however I sound, like, oh, well, why does Helga always have to be one of the two people in these pairings, you know, in these Odd Couple kind of episodes? But like, thinking about it, she, and I'm firmly on the side of, you know, Helga went way too far. I did, when she, vocalizes, Harold's train of thought, in certain situations, I admit that I laughed out loud, once or twice. There's oh, let's steal the clown's bike, they won't mind. That has tickled me ever since I watched this episode as a kid. But like, she's extremely mean. She is, as we all know, we're all very well aware, she's the type of character to push any other characters that she spends a lot of time with in a vacuum, you know, mano y mano. You know, she either, you know, will push them so far, or, you know, make them very upset or very downtrodden, or, you know, just, you know, like, really bummed out. And from those interactions, we see both of them optimally, or at the very least, we see the other character sort of, you know, like, how, like, their response to that is like a big, like, that is a reward that this episode can provide. The fact that Harold is at the point now, we're in season four, the trials he has been through, you know, he doesn't respond to all of this taunting with, you know, he's obviously very sad. He's not fighting back. He doesn't, you know, he wallows for a little bit, but it's been said he's got a lot going on under the hood. He has an awareness of where they are, and he can bounce right back and, you know, provide a, you know, an out for the situation. Miriam, you know, she has, she's able to brush a lot of that off. She's able to kind of show her true colors, bring out the best in herself. Part of that, is from her finding it herself, and part of it was probably from Helga being a tremendous, massive jerk. You know, take that for what you will, but, you know, there's certainly a reason why Helga is in these episodes. There's a certain reason why these episodes, for all that we're saying about how some of that doesn't quite go down very well, we're saying that we like this episode. And I think we, you know, largely liked, if memory serves, you know, her Vim Vendors Road episode with Miriam. It's tough. Helga's a problematic fave. But, you know, thankfully there are a lot of other, you know, genuine, good characters that we can throw into the ring with her. And, you know, both at the end of it come out for the better. And I like that feeling.
Yeah, I'm not going to defend Helga, I guess. I obviously wasn't as bothered by it as you guys are. I just have a soft spot for her. She was very mean in this episode. I think that the reason why she is so mean is to, as Seth put it, to really illustrate just how accepting Harold is of her, right? Like, Harold is a really big person in this episode, despite the fact that he has his really debilitating impulse control problems. I think maybe I'm a little bit sympathetic to Helga just because of how bad those impulse control problems are, and the fact that she's kind of the audience stand-in for being like, why are you like this? Like, why do you have to be like this? That being said, she does learn that lesson, right? I wish that I agree with Seth. I kind of wish that she would have been a little bit more, not punished necessarily, but if she could have expressed the lesson she learned a little bit more articulately as opposed to just apologizing. But I do really like this, that this episode is ultimately about acceptance, right? And it's ultimately about, like, in these situations, be the herald, right? Like, Harold doesn't fight back. Harold doesn't even, like, sort of give it back to Helga about what a jerk she's being. He just sort of, like, takes it all, which is part of why Helga seems so mean in this episode. But it is also why they get where they get in the end, right? So it's a really an episode about how Harold is a really good guy. I think I agree with you that they lean really hard on Helga's sort of bullying in this episode. But I think that there's something to be said about the fact that she is just sort of like this anxious logistical camp counselor, almost, if that makes sense. We're like, I love that she's the one who remembers that Harold is missing. I love that she's the one who is so frustrated about getting things done and out of the way. I really love that aspect of her characterization because it's so precocious in the way that she always is, where it's like you can see her standing outside of this episode and just like if she could control her anger a little bit better, she would see all of the absurdity, right? But she just can't do that. So I can't help but be sort of like charmed, I guess, by how she doesn't even understand that she is just as dysfunctional as Harold is, just in her own way, right? And Harold just accepts her dysfunctionality, whereas she cannot accept his. There's sort of a great mismatch there that really comes to a head in this episode.
Yeah, I like Seth's point about how Harold is like the star of the episode, I guess, and just like thinking about him as being this forgiving heart of gold guy. And he stays so positive throughout the Helga's tormenting him until he breaks. He does break and he cries and he's like, is this how you really see me? Like this, he's been treated terribly the whole episode. And then he's like crying because she's treating him terribly. But he is also in cahoots with the venue staff at WrestleMania. And like, yeah, he's super forgiving, too forgiving, but I think I like the lesson of be the herald in this instance if you can.
Be the herald. That is a shirt that is coming soon to the Stoop Kids shop. I almost said a different shop that this podcast empire oversees. That shop doesn't exist. Don't be on the lookout for that. Somebody make it and I'll buy it. The one kind of lingering quick note I have for this episode, no Big Bob. I thought it was, I mean, that would just be one thing too many to put in this episode. I was kind of endeared to the fact that it was Miriam, that the only person we saw in the Pataki household, definitely the parent you want on the other end of the phone when a child has gone missing. But, I don't know. Just yeah, kind of a quirky flavor to throw into this or not have in this episode. Any other thoughts, threads we didn't get to, shout outs that y'all have for planes, trains, bikes, automobiles, buses,
boats,
subways, trains, boats, rowboats specifically, rollerblades, etc.
I think I mentioned this in the A plot and a little bit in my top level thoughts, but I think this is just another really good example of like how not just Chocolate Boy, not just Miriam, not just Earl, like all of them. It's so fun to like slot Hey Arnold characters into plot beats, right? It makes the episode so much more than the sum of its parts. And it's such a joy to see that, especially this late when we have all of these standing characterizations as well established as they are. So really great part of that.
I guess I could do my final shout outs then. So shout out to Harold's blue face when he's eating all the candy. And also then he goes straight to the chocolate fountain and clearly broke the chocolate swan's neck and head off, because then he's holding it outside the factory and he's just drinking straight from the chocolate swan's body. Very funny. And also shout out to Helga for when she's going, well, it's okay, Harold. Like, everyone's going to realize soon that we're gone. Like, it's fine. And then it cuts to everyone on the bus singing 99 bottles of beer at the start of the song. And then it cuts right back to Helga being like, or maybe not, after she just like thinks about it for a little bit. Also so funny.
Am I the only one who thought it was weird that they went with beer as the beverage of choice? Like, that's, I don't think that would fly in my elementary school, like, field trip buses. Like, we would have to say pop or soda or, like, milk or something. Like, if I'm the weird one, I don't know. I've made a big deal about this in the watch party.
It's a good point.
I thought that was weird.
Should be root beer, right?
Root beer, yeah. Root beer's another great option.
Sprite. Flows right into the melody, too. Easy.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Seth, if you could drink 99 of a particular kind of beverage, what would it be?
Dr. Pepper.
Man, that is what makes you a king. Are we going to round table it to everybody? Emily, Harry, what beverage y'all drink a 99 of?
I mean, for me, it's got to be classic Coca-Cola. I know that's a boring answer, but look, I drink a Coke every day. I always have and I always will. Yahoo, nothing to it but to do it.
I might go with Yahoo soda.
Nice. And I am going with Fireball. Seth, thank you so much again for being here today. Where can people find you online and or in the real world if you want to, you know, give that information away? And also, is there anything that you would like to plug for the fine folks who are listening?
What's your home address, Seth?
No, thanks. Thanks again for inviting me on. Always a pleasure. Then this was a lot of fun to talk about. Both episodes, you know, had a lot of heft and were very enjoyable seeing for the first time. But you can find me on basically all social at SN Zarati. I was able to lock that down. My blood type is A negative and my social security number is...
Yep, and thank you, Jason, for bleeping that out, editing around that. One of the many things that we had to tiptoe around this episode. Just kidding, we had a great time. Thank you, everybody, and thank you, dear listener, for listening to Stoop Kids, a Hey Arnold podcast. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Stoop Kids Pod, and that's kids with a Z. This episode was produced by super producer Jason Daphnis, and you can find him on Twitter at Nintendoofus. I've been Cody Narveson. You can find me on Twitter at Cody _BH.
I've been Harry Mack, and you can find me on Twitter at Shiitake Harry.
I've been Monkey Man. You can find me at Monkey Man.
Whew. It's the last time I borrow some clown's bike.
Gotta have a banana split, Cody.
Yeah. I can't just get in my banana split car and go to the banana split store and get a banana split any ding dong day of the week. I've got so much going on, guys.
I see. He's simply too busy for banana splits.
I guess.
That's right.
Damn. I like that he was challenged, though, publicly.
I'm calling out you, Narveson!
Gauntlet thrown down.
I just want to share my love of banana splits with the world.
How many banana splits have you had?
I've had a lot of banana splits. I love banana splits. Don't fucking come at me.
Don't come at me!
Don't even talk to Harry about how many bananas splits.
No, I go there all the time. It's like two blocks from my apartment. I get a banana split.
Don't give me the banana shits for getting into banana splits.
That's right.